Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Hips, knees, feet, backs, heart, and lungs. They can all be repaired through surgery. In British Columbia, more than 65,000 people are waiting for surgery. That's because wait times for treatment are taking longer and longer. But what happens when you're sitting in line for treatment for over a year and the government won't allow you to seek external care under their coverage? Do you sit by and wait for months? Not if you're Dr. Brian Day. Dr. Day is taking Medicare to court. His goal is to shorten wait times and to create a space for doctors to treat patients without the limits of hospital availability. In a remarkable turn of events, the court has taken a recess to allow Day to raise more money to continue his legal challenge. To hear why he feels this fight is necessary and what steps need to be taken, we sat down with Dr. Day in his operating room for a conversation that matters. Dr. Brian Day, thank you for inviting us to your clinic.
You're welcome.
In a way, this clinic is at the epicenter of everything that you have been striving to do to change the healthcare system that we have in Canada. But the question that a lot of people ask is, what is it that you're trying to do? Are you wanting to abolish the system? Are you wanting to create something completely different? What's your vision of where we wind up that gives us a better healthcare system?
Well, I and the people in this clinic, the doctors, the staff, we've always believed in a strong public system. We want a strong public system. But in Canada, we don't have a strong public system. Because if you look around the world, and I'm not talking about the US, you'll find that countries with social programs that are greater than ours, like Sweden and Denmark and Holland and Belgium, they have a little bit of competition for the public system. We want the public system to be better than it is today. And a public system that has, you know, in BC, according to the government's own data, 85,000 people booked into the hospital but on a wait list, that's not a good system.
So how do we get from where we are to where you think gives us a better system? And what does that system then look like?
Well, the system, in the perfect, it's funny you ask that question, because there's an author called Mark Britnell, who last year wrote a book on the world's best health system. And he identified 12 features in 12 different countries of what we could encompass in designing the world's best health system. It's kind of notable that not one of the 12 countries, not one of those 12 categories was Canada represented. In other words, we weren't the best
in any category.
And the reason is, we're the only country on earth that has a pure monopoly when it comes to physician and hospital services. And I think that it's axiomatic that there is no monopoly that you or I can think of that serves consumers well. So, I mean, we started this clinic over 20 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way I explained it, actually, I gave evidence at the Senate Commission of Michael Kirby. And what I said to them is, you know, this is like if you were, to use an analogy, a mechanic and you had all of these cars that needed to be fixed and you had all of the staff and resources and the tools to do it, but the government owned the only repair shop in town and wouldn't let you into their repair shop. What that mechanic could do is go out and build his own repair shop. And that's essentially what we did, because mm-hmm. the government wasn't letting doctors and patients into their hospitals. So we need...
Even though you've gone and created a clinic that in some ways helps to alleviate the pressure on the system.
In BC, over 65,000 patients a year are being treated in private clinics. Many of them are the commonest patients we treat are injured workers. They're considered private patients by the system. I mean, in a way, it's bizarre.
Because WorkSafe BC is paying for their operation because they want them to go back to work and be contributors.
One of the WorkSafe BC executives said that we're saving them in wage loss benefits alone, not just our clinic, but all the clinics, between $100 and $200 million a year in wages. Now, let alone the savings in patient suffering. And we know, for instance, that if you're off the job for a year as a physical worker, there's a less than 10% chance you'll ever go back to that job. This is...
There's a huge human and talent cost, isn't there?
Our doctors have examples of patients who are in pain becoming drug addicted.
Yes.
Because they're on narcotics for 6-9 months while they're waiting for a 45-minute operation. It makes no sense. And it's not just surgeries. I mean, our clinic is focused on surgeries and procedures. But, you know, there are 4,000 suicides a year in Canada. If you know anyone who's ever tried to get access to mental health services, you'll find it's the most difficult thing to access, harder than to get in to see an orthopedic surgeon. And I've asked psychiatrists, you know, what about this? Because, as you know, like, psychological counseling isn't even covered in Medicare.
Right.
And they say... they believe that well over half of those lives could be saved if mental health services were readily available, and they're not. So there are a lot of things wrong with our health system that need to be fixed. It's not just a surgery center that can do it all.
So explain to me what your case is, because there's a lot of people who know that you're gone to court and you're saying, I'm petitioning to change the system. But what exactly is your case?
Our case is simply, and this has already been to the Supreme Court of Canada in 2005. Yep. Our case is simply this, that if a BC resident is suffering on a wait list and the government has promised to treat them in a timely manner, and it fails to treat them in a timely manner, should they be allowed to use their own private insurance, extended health insurance, Blue Cross, Great West Life, whatever, to access that care outside of the government system? Now, this has already been to court in Quebec, and the Supreme Court of Canada turned down laws that are exactly similar to those that we have in British Columbia. So if you want to say it in a nutshell, is should BC residents suffering on wait lists have the same protection under the charter that the Supreme Court of Canada gave to Quebecers? And in other words, are we equal in this country or are we unequal? Mm-hmm. That's the question. We don't have to, you know, in my mind, this case should be a two-day hearing, but it's already 8 months and we're not even halfway through. So we're very optimistic that putting these arguments before an objective court will kill all the rhetoric and false information that's out there.
So are you asking also in your case that if I don't have timely access to care, that it can also be paid for by the medical services plan?
Well, yes. What's interesting is we have...
Because why shouldn't it be?
Well, it should be. And actually, I would even think that it's arguable that they're under a legal obligation to do so. But the problem is we have a bureaucracy in healthcare that is trying to preserve the monopoly for themselves. And what we have with contracting out, as you know, the government does send some patients to private facilities if they're waiting too long. But it begs the question, if the government can make a decision that you are worthy of being funded to go to a private clinic because of your pain and suffering, what about those it does not make that decision for? Should they not be entitled to make the decision for themselves? And it comes back, you know, in a very plain question, it is, who owns and controls your body? Is it you or is it the state? That's we're the only, not many Canadians realize this, we are the only country on earth. The only country on earth, I'll say it again,
yes,
that says you cannot buy private insurance to cover yourself for health services when the government won't give them to you. The only country on earth. I was interviewed on CBC, and the interviewer turned to me and said, well, are you calling our system communist? I said, absolutely not. I said, Cuba, North Korea, Communist China, Laos, Vietnam. Mm-hmm. These are the five communist countries on Earth. None of them have laws like this. We're way to the left of any communist country. And this is Canadian Medical Association policy, that you should be allowed, if the government's not providing the service, they can't force you to wait and suffer on a wait list.
But do you not find it challenging that you get asked a question like that, as though somehow you are calling into question this sacred trust that we have, that so many Canadians say, you can't mess with our healthcare system because, you know, it's so unique and it's ours and it's equal.
Let's define what Medicare is. Medicare is not a health system. Medicare in Canada is a government-operated insurance scheme. Now, if you were paying a private insurance scheme, or you're paying insurance for your car, and when you crash your car, you were told by the insurance company, well, we're going to fix you, but it's going to be a year. Just wait a year. Or if you had a private health insurance scheme, and it said, oh, yeah, you need to claim? We'll pay it out in a year. You'd go and get another, you'd never pay those premiums again. You go to another company. But what the government has done is it's created its own monopoly insurance company. It's called itself Medicare. It basically evolved from the Canada Health Act of 1984. And, you know, in this year of Vimy Ridge, it's an insult to those people who's fought for Canada to even infer that before 1984, Canada had no national identity, and that we are identified by an insurance scheme that doesn't pay out when it's supposed to. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous.
What keeps you going? Do you not get discouraged at times?
Yes, I get discouraged because, to me, it's a very simple, you know, it's a very simple position that I'm taking. And the position is, we want a strong public health system. We have a weak public health system. If you were using the hockey analogy, Canada was recently ranked by a group called the Commonwealth Fund, and both federal and provincial health ministers came out and said this. We ranked 10th out of 11 of rich countries.
Yeah.
US was ranked one below us, so great for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were the 10th ranked hockey team and there were three or four teams at the top, which aren't you going to look at what those teams are doing and try and figure out what's different? Well, the thing that's different is they have universal health care, and they also cover things like dentistry and drugs and physiotherapy and ambulances.
Which we don't cover.
We don't cover.
Right.
As a hockey coach or manager, you go and say, well, what are the top three teams or four teams doing? And copy them, because that's what they do.
And why they're winning.
That's why they're winning, and yeah. It's why we are ranked number 10th. And to accept mediocrity, you know, Canada is ranked so highly in so many other areas.
Mm-hmm.
But in healthcare, we're ranked near the bottom. The World Health Organization ranked us 30th. But you know, some Canadian governments said, well, yeah, but look, the U.S. is ranked 37th.
Right.
So,
we're not advocating for an American system.
No, we're not. The American system is one of the most inefficient in the world because mm-hmm. it costs a lot and has all of these patients who are uninsured. But one of the things that is that, again, most Canadians probably don't realize is that in Canada, those with the worst access to healthcare and those with the worst outcomes are the lower socioeconomic groups.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government is in charge of only one area of direct healthcare, and that is First Nations health, Aboriginal health. Guess which is the worst performing health system? Aboriginal health.
Yeah, and not by a little bit, but by
a
lot.
No, and we have a system that is flawed. The problem with persuading Canadians that we need to change is that until you need it, you think it's okay. And you talked about an ambulance. In our system, an ambulance is called not medically necessary. Who decided that? Like, you get hit by a bus and you're lying on the road and the ambulance comes along and that's not covered by Medicare? How can that be? It makes no sense. The same with prescriptions. Mm-hmm. How can we not cover prescriptions? How can you say that diagnosing an infection is medically necessary, but treating it is not medically necessary? So go and buy the... If you've got no private insurance, you have to pay for the drugs.
So I can hear somebody listening to this right now going, okay, Dr. Day, where's the money going to come from that? We're having trouble paying the bills right now. How are we going to pay for that?
Well, the answer is, and you know, people don't like to hear this, is cut the bureaucracy and spend the money on patients. You know, I was once, I tongue-in-cheek answered a question once when I was asked by a senior politician, you know, what I would do if I were made the Minister of Health in BC. I said, well, the first thing, I said, that's a pretty easy question. So, what do you mean? I said, first thing I would do is abolish the Ministry of Health and then send all the money directly from the finance ministry to the hospitals and health authorities. I've instantly saved multiple billions of dollars. In Canada, we have 14 ministries of health for a population of 35 million. Germany has 85 million or more. They have one ministry of health.
For the entire country.
Guess where the money's going? Yeah, guess where the money's going in Canada? It's going into a bloated bureaucracy, and that bureaucracy is not exposed to any competition. That's why they're fighting our lawsuit. They're afraid of even. I'm not advocating for a private health system. I don't believe it needs any more than a 10% or a little bit of competition to expose the inefficiencies of the public monopoly. Mm-hmm. That's all it needs, and that's what happens in Germany. Only 10% have private insurance, but they have no wait list in their public system. There is no queue jumping in Germany and Belgium because in the public system because there are no queues. That's something that's foreign. The concept is foreign here.
So when I talk to orthopedic surgeons who say, you know, your wait one time is going to be 10, 11 months just to see me for a consultation, and wait two time, which is now that you see me, you got to wait to get in for surgery, could be another 12, sometimes 18 months. And they're running up against the fact that they don't have access to surgery.
They're blocked from the operating room. And, you know, one of the things that we've been attacked on is, oh, well, the private sector will take workers from the public system. We have, in Canada right now, 178 unemployed young orthopedic surgeons who are ready to treat patients. We have massive wait lists in orthopedics, but the government won't let those doctors work in the public hospitals. It's bizarre.
Well, and when you consider the investment in that education and the skill that's embodied in each one of those people.
A recent poll at the Canadian Orthopedic Association just last week showed 45% of these young orthopedic surgeons are looking to move abroad to get a job.
So we lose that talent. Yeah.
We have massive shortages of orthopedic surgeons. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I think we're going to change it.
Okay, so your big challenge right now, though, is that you're running out of money in your court case. So
yeah.
What are you going to do? Because if you can't finance the fight against, you know, people who have deeper pockets than you, then what's this for?
Well, yeah, it's very hard to take on government in, you know, we talk about inequality and access to healthcare. Inequality and justice is even worse. That governments have your money with which to fight you.
They're gobbling up any money that you have to fight this fight. Now, in an unprecedented move, you've been given leave to go raise some more money.
Yes.
What are you doing to do that?
We have a group called the Canadian Constitution Foundation, which is a national charity, and they are helping us fundraise. We're getting support. We're getting support from people that realize that something has to give here. Mm-hmm. We have a health system that's not delivering on its promises. It's not delivering access to care. It's not delivering universal care or comprehensive care. It's not portable. You know, the one criterion of the Canada Health Act that I just left out was run by the politicians. That's the only principle of the Canada Health Act that's being enforced is public publicly run by the government.
Mm-hmm.
We have to change that. So the Canadian Constitution Foundation is helping us raise the funds, and we're determined to go ahead. We're adjourned till September, and we're going to go ahead.
How much money do you need to keep going?
A few million dollars.
Where are you at right now?
We're not there, but...
Well, September's not very far away.
I know. You know, do you have $1 million?
No, I do not.
Didn't think you would.
Yeah, but I'm helping to tell your story.
Thank you.
Because I think it's important to understand that we do not have a single-tier healthcare system. And I get frustrated myself looking at the way that it gets administered. And then I'm not privy to any of these other, you know, venues for care.
Well, the workers' compensation, like the workers' compensation is just one example.
Yeah.
And you probably know RCMP and the Canadian Armed Forces, federal employees, and
politicians,
and
ICBC.
But perhaps the most outrageous are federal prisoners.
They get access to healthcare you and me. Yeah.
One of the lines I've used is that, you know, we're just fighting so that Canadians who aren't in jail can have the same rights that people who are in jail, that Canadians who are in jail have. And as you alluded to politicians, if I could name the names of people who've been in this clinic, which I'm not allowed to.
For confidentiality reasons, yes.
But there are people from every political party, many from the NDP, BC Liberals, from the interveners against us in our trial, people intervening against us, people who've campaigned out on our lawns, have been here and had surgery. You can see that drives me and that keeps me going. The fact that I know that, mm-hmm. and they know I know that, it keeps me going.
Thank you very much. I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you.